This is Danny and Gallant, live from Peoria all this week on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Trying to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. We are here live at spring training. Our spring training coverage is brought to you by Alaska Airlines with daily nonstop flights from Seattle to both Tucson and to Phoenix. But now it's time for Blue 42 with Brock Heward.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Brock, how the heck are you?
Good morning. I'm doing wonderful. I wish I were there with you guys. I'm curious if you have any update on the Buff Dude report. How are we looking?
Dude, I'll tell you what. We talked to Julio Rodriguez this morning. That is a Buff Dude who's going to get buffer. Brock, legitimately, yeah. Like built like a running back.
Your jaw would have dropped, Brock.
Yeah.
Really?
What is he, 6'3", 6'4"? And it's the squareness of his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he does. His power source, Brock, he does not skip leg day.
Woo!
I'm telling
I heard Jerry tell you guys that they've always profiled him as a center fielder, right? They've penciled him in there. They've given him every opportunity to be a future center fielder. But it sounds like he may just outgrow that position.
I can't imagine with the size he's going to be before not too long that he's going to play in center field.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's a good report. Thank you. That kind of makes me warm.
I was going to get into the curvature of his buttocks to explain just where all the power comes from.
No.
Moving on.
And Lydia was flat out dumb.
Question one.
Brock, why aren't you surprised that Russell is chirping about this new labor deal?
Because a little bit of what we talked about on Monday or Tuesday with Buzz Cook and how Russell Wilson fired the traditional NFL agent from Mississippi, Brett Favre's agent, number of quarterbacks agents, the number of NFL players agents was Buzz Cook. And after a couple of years, Russell said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not going to do the normal NFL route. I'm not going to be in that club where agents and teams get deals done. I want a disruptor. And he hired his baseball agent to come in and do that. And that's exactly really what he's done the last two contracts is he's disrupted the operation. They've made deadlines. They've made a cuff on the team to get that deal done. The first one in the 11th hour, the second one set for that April deadline. But ultimately, both those deals do get done. But it's not a surprise to see Russell tweet the way he did yesterday, saying, hey, this should be about the players, and let's look at Major League Baseball and the NBA, which are player-first leagues, and not sign this deal, and it's a big fat no to it. I really think that's because of the baseball agent, that baseball background, but I also believe that's not an apples-to-apple comparison. The scale of the NFL is entirely different than the scale of the NBA, the Major League Baseball, for that matter. So I respectfully disagree with Mr. Wilson.
How many players do you think on the bottom end of that scale that you just mentioned could be theoretically changed, their minds could be changed by Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers being as strongly in opposition to this proposal as they've been publicly?
Yeah, Paul, that's a good question. I think there will be some, and I think Tyler Lockett is also in lockstep with Russell, and you know, I think maybe more than anything, those guys do not want to feel like they've been pressured into this. I think that's probably the biggest complaint I've heard, is while the Players Association and others have done work for the last 9 months or so to really build just kind of the network or the framing of this deal, I think many of these players, including Russell and Tyler, feel like, you know, this is thrown upon them, and there's some leveraging as far as time and wanting to get this done before the TV deals expire a year from now and all this stuff can get buttoned up. And yeah, so I think this is natural. I think it was not ever and should never be 100% You're going to have some of this back and forth, Paul. And, yeah, I do think Tyler and Russell carry some weight in that locker room. And you know, there will be further conversations, I'm sure, before many of these players cast their final votes.
Question two. All right. It's UW quarterback time. It's Jacob Eason time at the NFL Combine. What must he do, Brock, to go and maybe get drafted in the spot where Jake Heaps has seen him potentially going, round number one, or even in that same kind of range, round two, round three?
He's got to put on a show tonight. So they moved the Combine into prime time. I've kind of been sitting here waiting, waiting to start watching some of the guys run and throw. And you know, I'm one of those guys that does enjoy that process, the eye test of it, seeing these guys' level of athleticism. It's actually one of the things I really do and have enjoyed over the years. Well, they flipped it around, and they've moved some of that timing around, so much so that John Clayton was able to fly home instead of having to stick around for another 3 or 4 days, because he's going to watch it in prime time like a lot of us are. And under those lights tonight, there will be no Tua throwing, there will be no Joe Burrow throwing. So you've kind of got the next guys in line. That's Jacob Fromm, that's Jordan Love out of Utah State, that's Justin Herbert out of Oregon, and then that's Jacob Eason out of Washington. And he's got to put on a show. And if I were advising him, I would say, watch Josh Allen's performance at this combine 2 years ago. He was the one that just had an overwhelming wow factor, that when you throw that deep corner or you throw that go route, instead of throwing at five and hitch, take a seven-step drop. Let that receiver get another 10 yards downfield and launch that thing 60 to 65 to 70 yards in the air. If you're capable of doing that, this is your opportunity to show off your greatest strength. It's not your decision-making. I don't think it's your accuracy, and I don't even think it's really the game tape at Georgia and Washington. Your greatest strength is that you're 6'6", you've got a cannon for an arm, and you've got to put that on full display tonight. And if that means, you know, taking a little longer drop and allowing those guys to get down the field a little bit more so you can unleash one of those lasers down the field and create a few of those wow moments, I would advise them to do just that.
Now, you and Heaps have a bet, right?
We do, yeah. I'm going to save every piece of our body hair using Paul Gallant's Manscaping lawnmowers.
Lawnmower 3.0, yeah.
They're betting yep. their trimmings on this. Jake Heaps thinks
eyebrows, hair, armpits, yeah.
Wow.
The whole deal.
So yeah, Heaps thinks he's going to be top 15, is that right? And you think more third to fourth round?
No, Heaps originally said he thinks top 10, top 15. He's come off that a little bit. He thinks he's absolutely, positively going to be a first-round pick. And I'm not so sure on that. So
okay.
It's whether or not he ends up in the first round of this draft.
Is this going to be the most important night in determining the answer to that question, how Eason throws tonight?
This is the night that he has the absolute opportunity to change perception and some of the narrative. This is the night that, yeah, as silly as that sounds, the 25 to 35 throws that he gets, this is the night where all of those eyes will be on him, where all of the eyes around the country will be watching, all the diehard football fans that enjoy this stuff. And certainly the people will be filming it, the DMs and the coaches and quarterback coaches and everybody else. This is the night that he gets a chance to change, I think, some of the negative perception and show off. It's like a bullpen session. You know, you guys are sitting at that table right there, and you're looking right at the bullpen, and this would be an opportunity for Tyler Walker to throw 95. Not that he needs to right now in camp, but this would be that kind of opportunity to just put some sizzle on the ball and leave a wow. This guy's got stuff a little bit different than the rest.
Like Logan Gilbert this afternoon, who's going to get his first start here in the Cactus League. I can see that. Question three, Brock. Who's the most intriguing local product to keep an eye on at the Combine?
Hunter Bryant, I think, is the guy that left school early at the University of Washington. I think that was a smart move for him. His body has been beat up over the years. He's battled some knee injuries, some knee surgeries, some other injuries. So the medical for him, which is done, the hay is in that barn. He's done that the last few days. That work is done. And now he gets to go out there and he gets to show off. And do you guys remember the name Evan Engram?
Yeah.
From Ole Miss. Yeah, I went back and kind of looked. I was trying to remember. To me, Hunter Bryant is a lot of Evan Engram. And Evan Engram, I believe, ended up going in the first round to the New York Giants 2 years ago. And it's shocking how similar their two frames are. And it was at the Combine where Evan Engram ran an extraordinary 40 time that did really propel his momentum and just kind of that conversation about his unique speed and athleticism. It really did propel him into that first round. Hunter Bryant repped 225 23 times. He was the second strongest tight end when they did that work yesterday. He, too, will get on that field in the next day or two and have a chance to run and jump at 240 pounds in ways that are very different than his peers in this tight end class. And as much as this NFL loves that active tight end, that guy that can beat linebackers and safeties and nickelbacks, and if you're going to put nickel, as John Schneider said, on the field, like most teams are 70% of the time, you want a guy like Hunter Bryant with his athleticism to be able to be out there in a two tight end package and beat that nickel and block that nickel and even in some cases run by that nickel back, which if he runs, I think, in the 4.5s of his size, he too has a chance to really help himself.
One of the things I remember from this past football season was that when we talked about the Huskies, we would talk about the lack of a use of Hunter Bryant in specific games. Do you feel like if maybe the Huskies had used him differently this past season, he would be a more talked about prospect going into this draft?
Possibly. I think he is being talked about, Paul, in those scouting circles. I think you're starting to hear more and more of that. I do think his injury history, as I've chatted with Daniel Jeremiah and some of those other guys, this will be all about the comfort level that people just have in that body that's been a little bit beat up since high school. So I think that's why there's a little more reservation, not necessarily the usage. He still showed those huge flash plays and that unique athleticism for his size. You saw that. You saw that productivity flash at times this season, to your point. Not nearly enough and consistently enough, I think, for many of our likings. But, I think he's already got a name and a perception, and will only have a chance to build upon it here when he runs and jumps and does and puts all his work in over the next couple days.
Paul's so much nicer than me, so much more polite, because I would have asked that question. Do you think if Bush Hamden was smarter, we'd be talking about Hunter Bryant more right now?
Well, that's, I think, why Bush is at Missouri right now. It just didn't. As a first-time coordinator, he had a lot to learn. He climbed the learning curve and was a little bit better this year. But yeah, I think that there were many opportunities with some of those different pieces over the last few years.
Did you say he's coaching in Missouri now?
He's in Missouri.
Oh, Missouri. My bad. My bad. That is Blue 42. Brock, we love having you on for that.
Oh, it's fun, man. Have you guys had a great time? And by the way, thanks to Toyota Piel for making this happen every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Are you guys having a blast?
We are having a fantastic time. We were supposed to ask you a little bonus question, too. What's the best piece of intel that you've heard this week from Pete Carroll and or John Schneider there at the Combine?
I think and I don't know if it was Pete at the big podium or when he was on with the professor. I think it was on when he was with John. And he said there's 6 or 7 of these veteran defensive end pass rusher guys that they're taking a look at. And, these guys, and I know that you like to parse Pete, and everybody likes to make fun, and nobody tells you anything, and these guys never say anything. But every once in a while, I think we found over the last decade, those guys will. They'll talk to you, about some of the numbers they have and some of the strengths of the draft and different things. And I thought that was a pretty good little tell that Pete and John, have maybe a backup plan. If Mr. Clowney is going to push this market to $22, $23, $24 million with a cap that's growing, something outrageous, that there are a half dozen or more guys that they're taking a good hard look at.
Do you feel that Clowney is going to look at all these situations and think to himself, there is no comparison to the team that is closest to a title when it comes to the Seahawks and everybody else that have the amount of cap space to pay him? Because that's the impression I've gotten, Brock. I just have a hard time feeling like there's another contender that can outbid him. That doesn't mean that there's no team that's going to be able to give him an offer he can't refuse. But that's the only reason I'm holding on to any optimism with Clowney right now and him returning to the Seahawks.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a team in Indianapolis, right, that's got a bunch of cash. I think that
still, though, Jacoby Brissett, and it's hard to imagine them getting a quarterback this offseason.
They might get Philip Rivers.
It is. But And they get Philip Rivers, right? And they got a bunch of pieces. I think it's just got to be a legitimate, and is it $500,000 or $1 million, or, you know, as we talked a bunch this offseason in how they want to move this deal around. Ultimately is the comfort of knowing what you got, that bird in the hand of knowing, oh, there's Russell. Oh, that's right. Greg Olsen, who's been other places. And in fact, in a pretty quality organization that went to a Super Bowl, won a lot of games. You know, even a Greg Olsen was pretty clear that, yeah, I want to play and be around that guy and this team. And I played against them enough to know, well, Jadeveon Clowney played against them, but then he got to be with them. And I would hope ultimately that that could be, if it's a $500,000 difference, if it's moving money around to still have the biggest deal ever, but make it pay off for the team just a little bit so they can get some of the other things done. I would hope knowing what he experienced here and being on the inside can give them that edge, more so than Jacoby Brissett, or more so than you're a contender and more of a contender than others, that you truly want to be here because you know how good the quality of life and the quality of work environment truly is.
Brock, we love having you on, and we appreciate your time. We'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Sounds great, guys.
That is Blue 42. It is brought to you each and every day by Coors Light. The quote that Brock was referring to from Pete Carroll is the number one quote on our cut sheet. And it is him talking about the different options that they are considering. And it makes it clear that this is not necessarily an all or nothing scenario with Jadeveon Clowney, that they're balancing some different opportunities. Here was Pete talking with John Clayton about their different opportunities at pass rusher.
There is a pretty good group of guys, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that all comes down. There's a half dozen guys that have been effective, maybe more than that, half, you know, dozen that we're looking at for sure, that have been effective and put up some numbers and could add to a club and could help us. And so, you know, we just have to see how it sorts out.
We got to find out what the names are, because we've heard a lot of the potential options that could be available, whether it's, say, Matthew Judon, or it's a Yannick Ngakoue, also Shaquille Barrett. Sounds like a lot of those guys are going to end up getting the franchise tag. So if they're getting the franchise tag, then who are we talking about as far as guys who have actually put up numbers that are going to be available for the Seahawks to sign?
Vic Beasley's probably in that category, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who was somebody that was not re-signed by Atlanta. Other guys that they'll be looking at? It's tough to kind of find out. It seems like there's a top tier. And the top tier, the top four guys... Three of them, it sounds like, are going to get franchise tagged, and you just mentioned them.
Right.
Judon, Shaq Barrett, and as well as Yannick Ngakoue. And then there's Clowney, who is not going to be tagged.
Beasley's an interesting one, too, because Dan Quinn and Pete Carroll have such a great relationship. Do you think that Dan Quinn is going to steer Pete wrong, say Pete were to ask him about why you're not bringing back a Vic Beasley? I mean, I almost wonder if that rules out the idea of Vic Beasley altogether, that Dan Quinn would be willing to move on from him.
I think it's a matter of price. That would be my guess, that it's a matter of price with Beasley. And just because the Falcons got to a point where they didn't want to extend him, he's coming off of a first-round pick contract with them, and maybe it just didn't work and they would want. I think it's a matter of price. I don't think that Seattle is going to go out and buy Vic Beasley. I think it would be
right.
A matter of, here's where we value him, is we'll see if he gets enough interest to go somewhere else. But this is what we're looking at for you. We'd like to have you here, but you're a situational pass rusher.
A dozen names or so. Here's the other question I have, because if you're looking at a dozen names and you're looking at things the way that, Danny, you just mentioned, where you're not buying any of these guys, you're sitting back and you're waiting and you're hoping that some guys are going to be available almost auction style on eBay. Are you going to find someone that you know is going to be able to contribute right away and help the pass rush out? Or are you going to find yourself in another situation where you say to yourself, you know, we remember what Ziggy Ansah used to be. Let's see if we can get this out of player X, Y, or Z, who will probably be available still at that point because of age, because of injury history, something along those lines.
You are not going to get a pass rusher that will excite us more than Jadeveon Clowney for less money. It doesn't mean you won't get a better pass rusher than him, but when the moment that they sign him, we're not going to look at it and like, oh my gosh, they hit this one out of the park. Because, look, by definition, Clowney's unrestricted. Clowney's going to get the biggest deal, I'm almost certain of it, of these group of guys, unless he chooses to take less from Seattle, which you can't expect if you're the Seahawks. If you're the Seahawks, like, you can't go into this saying, you present yourself and put your best foot forward with Clowney. I don't think you're going to have someone, even if it's Yannick Ngakoue, Are you going to say, like, you know what, this is a better player than Jadeveon Clowney?
No, you're not going to say that. And here's the thing, too. It's not about making splash moves, but I ask this question, too. Do you trust the process, if you will? If they were to bring in some veteran pass rushers, do you feel like it's going to work out? I'm not going to lie. I'm a little hesitant to feel that way just because of the Ziggy Ansah situation. And it's a totally unique prospect in Ziggy Ansah in that this is a guy who a couple of years ago was someone who you looked at as a potential 15 sack a year player. Then he suffers those injuries. And then you're looking at him in a completely different lens, which is why he was able to be signed by the Seahawks for basically just a 1 year kind of prove it deal. But I'm wondering who is going to be out there that sort of fits that mold where you're not going to have to pay a whole lot for. Because there's always teams that are looking for pass rushers every offseason, and there's always teams that pay stupid money for a guy who's not worth it.
There's a lot of conversation. Are the Rams going to tag Dante Fowler?
That's an interesting one because he was effective last season.
How about the Steelers with Bud Dupree? Now, it's a different defense. It's a 3-4 defense, but Pete will always say that they play a 4-3 scheme with 3-4 personnel. Now, typically, Pittsburgh tends to retain its own guys.
I'd be surprised if Bud Dupree walked. I really would. I think they like him, and I think that they like the idea of having TJ Watt and a Bud Dupree. I liked him coming out of college, too. I was excited about the prospects that he could bring to the table. So I would be surprised if Pittsburgh let him walk. In the case of Dante Fowler, Fowler is the guy that you look at and you feel this could be a Seahawk project. Where they look at him, he's got obviously the checkered history off the field. He maybe has been a bit of a pain in the butt for teams.
Sounds
in the
like
past.
Slightly a knucklehead, but the criminal thing he had, he got mad at a guy.
He just threw his groceries in the lake.
I think it was even more than that. I think it was his liquor bottle.
Right.
Like, I think he was mad at something the guy said to him as he was driving through the neighborhood and broke his glasses and threw his booze in the lake. I would look at it as more as that Dante Fowler was a former number 3 overall pick.
He was.
He had a torn knee ligament before he played. He's gotten back to it. There's times when you've seen him flash his ability, but he's never been able to put that together. That's not a guy that I'm going to pay a premium for.
And same here.
That's
same here.
Not a guy that I'm going to be willing, if a top-shelf contract. And if the Rams are considering franchise tagging him, speak to the fact that if they feel if they don't give him that, somebody else will.
Do they have the money to franchise tag anyone? I am surprised. I mean, we're hearing conversations about them potentially re-signing Andrew Whitworth, and I'm like, what? Where's the money for this? Where's the money for anything? A long-term extension for Jalen Ramsey, talking about all sorts of different contracts. Where are the Rams getting all this money from?
They're going to renegotiate the hell out of two contracts. Todd Gurley and Jared Goff, and they're going to kick the can down the road in the cap charges with those. That's how you do it. Just renegotiate. You absolutely move it down. You change stuff to signing bonuses. There are ways to do it. You're eventually going to have to pay the price, but you break out the credit card. Here's two other guys who are at the more bargain end of the spectrum. Jason Pierre-Paul.
Ooh, Nubsy.
And Robert Quinn, who played this past season with the Dallas Cowboys. And Robert Quinn has been a very effective player over the course of his career. He's 30 now. Mm-hmm. He's 30. He's an older player. And actually, what's an interesting twist is he's exactly the position. If Seattle had not won that Week 17 game in 2010 and set up Beastquake, that was the pick that the Rams used to get Bob Quinn, which the Seahawks would have had they lost to the Rams, which I always thought was funny. Like, that was actually the price of it. It was they ended up, because they won that playoff game, they ended up getting into the second round of the playoffs. They ended up with James Carpenter instead of Robert Quinn.
If you end up with Robert Quinn and JPP and you don't have Jadeveon Clowney, are you better?
I don't know. Not necessarily.
2 versus 1.
Yep.
That's the sell. You could sell me on that. And even as perhaps the biggest Jadeveon Clowney apologist and truther in the city of Seattle, I would listen to that because I feel like that actually is doable, is realistic. I don't know what the contributions would be, but that is how the Patriots, I think, would operate. They would look for the bargain guys. They would bring them in and they would say, look, we're the Seahawks. We are that close. We have Russell Wilson. That's the play, I think.
Vic Beasley, Shaq Lawson, who's a little bit younger, Marcus Golden. These are also guys. Then you get toward the other end of it. Mario Addison, I think, is too old at 33. These are all guys who are going to be on the free agent market. And that's where if you're looking at 5 or 6 different free agent defensive linemen, that's probably about the limit. You can get a couple of those guys, maybe one from the top tier, maybe Quinn or Jason Pierre-Paul. and then add that out and flesh that out. I do get the sense that they are going to look to add multiple players, that even if it's Clowney, they want Clowney plus somebody. And if it's not Clowney, then maybe you get two guys who each of them is better than the second pass rusher you get if you brought back Clowney.
I would bang on the table for both Quinn and for Jason Pierre-Paul. And if that's the secondary guy in addition to bringing back Jadeveon Clowney, I think that's a success. I think that's a success going into next season with your pass rush. Who knows what happens on the field, but I would say, yep, that's cool. And hopefully you end up drafting somebody those first three picks too.
It is Danny and Gallant. We are here at spring training. The Seahawks have a lot of decisions to make, while the Mariners, they're looking toward the future. A big part of that is somebody we saw last year. In fact, Paul saw his first home run. Kyle Lewis, a.k.a. Showtime, sits down with us next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It's Danny and Gallant, and we're joined now by Kyle Lewis. And Kyle, you have a special place in my co-host's heart. He's new to Seattle. And one of his, was it your first night in town?
My first night in town, I went to a Mariners game, and I saw you hit a home run off of Trevor Bauer. Now, obviously, you're welcome for being the good luck charm, but, man, that was awesome. I mean, what a way to start off your major league career, and I imagine it's given you a whole lot of confidence as you continued through September and into this year.
Yeah, tons of confidence, and really just kind of like trying to take everything in stride, you know, build out my story. So that's just a cool way to kind of start it off, and something, you know, we'll be able to talk about later on.
Does it change the way you feel in spring training this year, having had that experience at the major league level last year?
Yeah, for sure. I think raises the comfort level, you know, being around the guys and being around the coaching staff, being able to have played some games with them and kind of be around them day in and day out for a little bit. So that definitely helps.
You also have a spring training here where it's a lot of the young guys. I mean, last year there were veterans here, and that's not to knock anything. Like, Jay Bruce and Edwin Encarnacion have accomplished a lot in this game, but it was a team that was kind of in transition. It feels like this year there's a ton of young guys that are here.
Yeah, a lot of young guys, a lot of young energy, a lot of guys hungry, trying to get a spot. So makes for a competitive camp, and everybody's showing up working every day.
It really sounds like everyone's getting along, and I imagine a lot of you guys playing together in Arkansas, that must have helped. Who are your best friends on the team right now?
Evan White and Justin Dunn. And then we got Donnie Walton, Sheffield, and all those guys, man. There's a lot of guys that kind of hang out together.
We hear Evan White is a huge Bachelor fan.
Yeah, he's his wife is a huge Bachelor fan, and he's just by default. So we try to go over there and watch it. I don't know what's going on because I don't have a wife. So
that's what Justin Dunn said, too. But everyone is watching along with it because Evan is watching it, too. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, pretty much.
Here's the thing I would say, though, is that most guys that are interested in The Bachelor kind of blame it on their wives, but they get personally invested, too. Like they get tied into it, because I worked with two old dudes before, and they knew an awful lot about what was going on in The Bachelor for it being just a show their wife watched.
Yeah, I've heard that. I haven't really got into it, so
I
can't speak on that.
It pulled me in, Kyle.
Yeah.
It'll get you eventually. You just have to give it time and patience and also realize that it's a circus.
Okay.
One of the things in talking about kind of the group of young guys that's here, I wonder, do you guys talk to each other about kind of what your dreams and ambitions are? Or is that something that's kind of you keep close to yourself? Like, do you guys sit together and daydream about it? Or is that, I wondered how younger players coming up through the minors deal with that. Because you all have the same ambitions in some ways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Everybody, you know, talks about that. Just trying to get on the same page about what we're trying to accomplish and trying to do it together. Trying to be, you know, genuine friends and build relationships that can carry over onto the field. And that definitely makes it a lot easier to play.
Do you find it inspiring?
Inspiring, yeah. I think it's just easy to show up and play when you got guys that you know believe in and they believe in you, and we're kind of going in the same direction or trying to.
And I imagine the competition level, especially when it's people that you know, that you're friendly with, you're all holding each other accountable. It's fun competition at the same time, but you're also pushing each other.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix. I think the competition part is just kind of everybody. You want to see everybody, you know, be as good as they can be. You know, you don't want any shortcuts. So you want everybody to be as good as they can be at the top of their game, and then let the chips fall where they may and everything play out the way it's going to play out roster-wise and playing time-wise and things like that. But everybody, you want everybody to be great just because, you know, as a human, I just kind of want to root on everybody.
What was the thing you learned most about your experience in the major leagues? Like, what did that teach you last year, that kind of final month and a half of the season?
I think just more the preparation that goes into, you know, being great every day. You know, the preparation and the way you can, you know, shape your life you know, to be successful and make it a lot easier on your mind because there's a lot going on up there, you know, media-wise and, you know, day in and day out traveling and things like that. So you got to be able to kind of shape your mind to slow it down and, you know, make off the field a lot easier, run a lot smoother so you can just focus on the task at hand.
Travel's got to be one of the fun parts, though, when you get to the big leagues, right? Does the accommodation change a little bit?
Yeah, it's a lot different. It's a lot different, and you know, had a lot of fun, a lot of wide eyes first few times.
First few times, that's awesome. Well, what have the veterans been like? We talked with Marco Gonzalez, and he's obviously right now as one of the veterans on the team, and it was great talking with him. And it sounds like he's a great resource to and for these young players like you and others to reach out to. Have all the other veterans been the same way? And what have you been asking question wise for these guys, picking their brains as you try to get ready for a major league season?
Yeah, I think the veterans have been great as far as just, you know, kind of pushing you in the right direction when they feel like, you know, you're not going in the right direction. Even small things, you know, showing up a little earlier, all those kind of things. Ways to think about different pitchers, you know, pitchers throwing a heavy sinker or something, ways to think about it. I think Kyle Seager helps a lot in that aspect. I'm always asking him questions. Probably sometimes it's like stop asking questions, but I keep asking and just trying to learn everything. And then Marco, I think, is more on the pitching side. You know, as far as hitter-wise, we just kind of, you know, chit-chat in passing, but you know, I've heard from the pitchers that he's really helping them and really, you know, trying to put his two cents in.
There had been a pool table in the clubhouse here before. I notice it's a ping pong table.
Yeah.
That seems to get the majority of the attention this year. How are you at ping pong?
I am. I thought I was good. I lost in the first round, but
who'd you lose to?
Wyatt Mills. Mills is pretty good, though.
You know? Is he?
I think pitchers tend to be, you know, a little better at those kind of.
Probably have more time.
Yeah, more time to just kind of sit around and play ping pong.
It's kind of like the kickers in football. Like, they tend to be the best golfers.
Yeah.
I think there's a correlation between those things. Pitchers also tend to golf a fair amount.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
When you look at the other guys in the outfield, who are the guys, what are skill sets that impress you? Like, Jake Fraley, you've played with a little bit.
Yeah.
What jumps out to you about him?
Explosive, you know, really quick bat, fast hands, and able to make consistent contact, so he makes a lot of things happen, you know, with the bat in his hand. And he's got a good arm, too, you know, so it kind of helps out on both sides of the ball.
Have you watched either of the two young kids, Kelnick or Rodriguez?
Yeah, I played with Jared the last year in Double A, and you know, he's really good. Really good, really skilled hitter. I think he's got a great feel for the bat and his barrel. He's got a great feel for making adjustments, you know, in high velocity, low velocity. He's able to, he may take a swing where he's a little late, and the next one he's right on time, so he's got a great feel for. You can tell he's got a great feel for his swing and himself.
We've been struck by how big Julio Rodriguez is.
Yeah, he's massive.
Did you get the same impression right away?
Yeah, he's massive. He stood up yesterday, you know, in the meeting, and I just kind of turned to my locker mate. I'm like, man, that guy's blessed.
You're not too far behind him.
Yeah, I'm not, but, you know, I'm 24, and he is 19.
That's so true.
When he's 24, I don't want to see that.
Well, I think you might want to see it because he might be lining up in the outfield next year, and that could be a great thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really fun to see kind of what you guys are putting together here. And I covered the Seahawks kind of when they made in 2012, 2013, when they became a great team. And one of the things I remember is that they were all a bunch of guys that were about the same age and kind of trying to make their name, and everybody was together. And it created an environment where, I mean, it was really competitive but really supportive, and they really were able to generate it. It will be fascinating to watch to see if you guys can do the same thing.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I definitely feel like, you know, it's possible. You know, you never know how everything turns out. Every player's got to kind of maximize their ability and become something close to that. But the potential's there.
What goals have you set for yourself your first full season in the big leagues?
Health is, you know, always a goal for me now. Just staying healthy, taking care of my body the right way. And then I would say just continue to make adjustments, continuing to learn. I feel like I don't want to go in there with any sort of expectations. You know, I think expectations, you know, promote failure when you don't reach certain things that you felt like you did. I never want to feel like I failed, so I'm just going to go out there and, you know, try to work hard and apply myself. And I know that if I do those two things, then, you know, good things will happen.
Kyle, I had one goal for this interview, and we've made it to the end, that I was not going to ask you about the knee injury. I was like, that is far in the past.
Yeah.
We've gone over that. We're so excited about your future.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to talk to you, and you've got a fantastic personality and explosive swing. Can't wait to watch you.
All right. Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
It is Danny and Gallant. We are live at spring training. The Mariners wrapping up their team meeting. They're going to be playing split squad games today, and we're going to be on the radio over there in the fourth inning. You can hear us come on
with
Dave Sims and Gary Hill. Should be very, very exciting. Coming up next, Why do some people think the biggest asset in football is actually a problem? It's mind-numbing. We'll explain next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
A couple of days ago in Indianapolis, Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll was asked a question that honestly should never be asked by any reporter, media member, or anything when it comes to how a roster is constructed. Here's Pete.
Yeah, it's a good observation. It is a challenge. Yeah, it affects you first in free agency, you know, with a chance to be real active this early part of the free agency period is a real challenge. You have to do really well with all of your picks, and we always try to get as many as we can because we feel like we can get that the competitiveness in our camp will help us. And then you have to make really wise decisions along the way, and there's really, really tough decisions that you have to make because every single step of the way you're up against the numbers. And so, you know, it's just something John's great at, and he's done a marvelous job of. It's hard to stay up. It's hard to stay up. The league, everything is designed to knock you back down and let the teams, you know, work their way up, and that's how it's always been.
The question was, does having someone like Russell Wilson and his cap figure affect how you build your roster? Danny, I hate hearing that question because it's essentially like asking someone, just how difficult is it living in a mansion? Is it hard to clean everything? Is it hard to reach every single one of your 8 bathrooms?
Here's what it is. It is asking a lottery winner about the taxes you have to pay on the prize you just won. It is asking someone, in this case, Russell Wilson is the lottery ticket. The cap challenges are the tax on the lottery winnings you've got. You got that lottery winner, Russell Wilson, you scratched it off, you've won buku bucks, you're really excited about it, and then it's complaining, the taxes are killing me. Well, you know what? The taxes are actually a luxury because you won the prize. You won the prize, and now you're complaining about what you have to pay after winning the prize.
This reminds me of a story, Danny, that I saw from Ryan Grigson a couple of years ago, and it's one of the reasons that the idea of Ryan Grigson as general manager of the year infuriated me. Ryan Grigson once said after giving Andrew Luck a massive contract that, yeah, this really hamstrings our ability to build a defense. And it just makes me think, imagine you're a general manager. You have one of the best quarterbacks in the game, and you're saying, man, it's really hard to build a roster around this guy. Oh, it's just so difficult. Because when you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson, first off, guys are going to want to play for you on a discount. It's essentially like the LeBron James equation in the NBA where there are a lot of veterans who are going to play for a minimum salary because they think to themselves, you know what? I'll play with LeBron because he might drive me to a championship that I would never have had the opportunity to win. I don't get why it continuously gets asked. And I also think, too, that it's a false narrative. I think that with the salary cap ballooning to the degree that it has over the last couple of seasons, the idea that you having one guy who is making that much money affecting the rest of your roster construction is just patently false. I don't think it does that at all. And you can always manipulate figures in a way that will allow you to bring in somebody in free agency if you so choose. But ultimately, it's about if you draft well. It has nothing to do with whether or not you have a quarterback on your roster or no quarterback on your roster. The idea of someone asking Pete that, and Pete was patient and he answered the question, but when you have someone like Russell Wilson, so many things fall into place after the fact. Why would you ask that?
You can't buy solutions once you have a franchise quarterback that you're paying franchise quarterback money, right?
Right.
You can't spend your way out of a hole. You can't go and make multiple purchases. Usually there are exceptions. The Packers did it last year getting both Preston and Za'Darius Smith. But for the most part, you're not going to be one of the more aggressive spending teams in free agency when you've got a player who's taken up 20% of your salary cap number. That's true. But you also have a benefit of having one of those franchise quarterbacks in that every year that will start, you will have a reasonable expectation of contending for a playoff spot.
Exactly.
And that's a huge benefit. From now, for the next 5 to 7 years, each season that begins, we are going to expect the Seahawks. The idea that, oh, they'll probably miss the playoffs because it's a rebuilding year, that doesn't apply for the next 5 to 7 years because Russell Wilson's that good. The thing that will absolutely crack me up about that question and about it's because people look at it, it's like, well, can you go and get a young quarterback? When you draft a rookie quarterback who turns out to be good on your team, it gives you a huge spending luxury for 2 to 3 years. You can't ever recapture that value. Seattle's never going to have the ability to have Russell Wilson playing on a rookie contract again. And that was just a window in time, and I actually think they did a great job of making the most out of it. But the idea of, oh, if we could just go back to drafting, good luck finding that guy. Good luck finding that guy in the draft, even if you have one of the first five picks. Because, yes, you won the lottery for a short period of time, and then the taxes do come due, and you have to pay those, and you have to start living on a budget. But don't make a mistake of saying, like, oh, can't we just win the lottery again? Because that's not how the world works.
Right, exactly. And it's been drawn up like it's a formula. Hey, if you draft an all-world quarterback in the draft at some point, you're going to have a really good chance to build around him. Oh, wow. That's a formula? Okay. Thanks for introducing that to me.
You look at what happened with the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes is still on his rookie quarterback deal. And he was able, the Chiefs were able this past year to sign Tyrann Mathieu, to trade for Frank Clark, and they made the most of this window of opportunity with those guys. They're going to franchise tag Chris Jones. That was announced today. They want him as part of their long-term. It is going to become increasingly difficult for them to retain all of their talent because the bill is going to come due on their quarterback. And you know what? They should be happy to pay it because they have Patrick Mahomes.
100%. And you know, I look at two every year. I think it's a little bit overstated the sacrifice that Tom Brady makes with the contracts he takes, because the contract that he has is still a significant cap hit. We're talking about a difference of maybe like $5-7 million from he and the top quarterbacks in the game, and people are like, wow, Tom Brady, so unselfish and all that. No, Tom Brady's still getting paid. It's just a little bit less than those guys at the top. The Patriots have to navigate that same water that every single team that has a good quarterback does. And I think it's really funny that it's constantly brought up like, well, you better win while he's still on his rookie contract, because after the rookie contract's done, Danny, you're going to have to find a way to win a championship. And like, when you look at teams that spend big in free agency, how often do they actually strike it big and win a Super Bowl? The only exception that I can think of off the top of my head over the last 10 years, and I suppose you could make the argument for Kansas City, is like the Denver Broncos. When they brought in one offseason after getting smoked by the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, they bring in DeMarcus Ware. They bring in T.J. Ward. They bring in Aqib Talib, and it works out for them great for a year. You can always add, in addition to having a quarterback on your roster, that's a big cap hit. It is not a restriction. And if you were one of these teams, like the New York Jets, that has another quarterback in 20 years, you can go further than that, the Miami Dolphins or something like that too, and you hear this stuff, just laughable. Like, oh man, you're in a really rough situation because you got Russell Wilson's contract on the books.
Yeah,
poor Seahawks.
Yeah, try building when you don't have the quarterback. So you're going to be able to build a defense to make up for the absence of a quarterback. It's much easier to build a defense to complement having a weighty quarterback salary.
You're still paying a bad quarterback. It's not even you don't have that for free. Imagine you're in Nick Foles' situation.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Sam Darnold's still on his rookie contract.
Yeah, that's true. So the Jets still have a chance to win a title because he's on his rookie contract.
Yes, that's the only thing I can cling to at this point.
There you go.
And yes. Le'Veon Bell, not on the trading block.
No, because no one will take him.
Yes.
See, that is hard to build around. You're paying a running back $800 million like the Rams are and like the Cardinals are. It's Danny and Gallant, Danny O'Neill, Paul Gallant, Jessamyn McIntyre. We're all hanging out in Peoria, Arizona for Mariners spring training. We've heard a lot of different things coming out of Indianapolis when it comes to the Seattle Seahawks. We finally got an answer as to why one of the big questions all season about what they were doing defensively is something that continued to happen. And it looks like they actually might be going in a different direction than the one we expected to in free agency, or maybe we're hoping for. All of that next. It's Danny and Gallant.